Today we'll be continuing The Scarlet Letter by Nathaniel Hawthorne. Chapter 17, Part 2. "Oh, Arthur," cried she, "forgive me. In all things else, I have striven to be true. Truth was the one virtue which I might have held fast, and did hold fast, through all extremity, save when thy good, thy life, thy fame were put in question. Then I consented to a deception. But a lie is never good, even though death threaten on the other side. Dost thou not see what I would say? That old man, the physician, he whom they call Roger Chillingworth, he was my husband." The minister looked at her for an instant, with all that violence of passion, which intermixed in more shapes than one with his higher, purer, softer qualities, was, in fact, a portion of him which the devil claimed and through which he sought to win the rest. Never was there a blacker or fiercer frown than Hester now encountered. For the brief space that it lasted, it was a dark transfiguration. But his character had been so much enfeebled by suffering that even its lower energies were incapable of more than a temporary struggle. He sank down on the ground and buried his face in his hands. "I might have known it," murmured he. "I did know it. Was not the secret told me in the natural recoil of my heart at the first sight of him, and as often as I have seen him since? Why did I not understand? Oh, Hester Prynne, thou little knowest all the horror of this thing, and the shame, the indelicacy, the horrible ugliness of this exposure of a sick and guilty heart to the very eye that would gloat over it. Woman, woman, thou art accountable for this. I cannot forgive thee. Thou shalt forgive me," cried Hester, flinging herself on the fallen leaves beside him. "Let God punish. Thou shalt forgive." With sudden and desperate tenderness, she threw her arms around him and pressed his head against her bosom, little caring, though his cheek rested on the scarlet letter. He would have released himself, but strove in vain to do so. Hester would not set him free, lest he should look her sternly in the face. All the world had frowned on her. For 7 long years had it frowned upon this lonely woman. And still, she bore it all, nor ever once turned away from her firm, sad eyes. Heaven likewise had frowned upon her, and she had not died. But the frown of this pale, weak, sinful, and sorrow-stricken man was what Hester could not bear and live. "Wilt thou yet forgive me?" she repeated over and over again. "Wilt thou not frown? Wilt thou forgive?"
"I do forgive you, Hester," replied the minister, at length, with a deep utterance, out of an abyss of sadness, but no anger. "I freely forgive you now. May God forgive us both. We are not, Hester, the worst sinners in the world. There is one worse than even the polluted priest. That old man's revenge has been blacker than my sin. He has violated, in cold blood, the sanctity of a human heart. Thou and I, Hester, never did so."
"Never, never," whispered she. "What we did had a consecration of its own. We felt it so. We said so to each other. Hast thou forgotten it?"
"Hush, Hester," said Arthur Dimmesdale, rising from the ground. "No, I have not forgotten."
They sat down again, side by side, and hand clasped in hand, on the mossy trunk of the fallen tree. Life had never brought them a gloomier hour. It was the point whither their pathway had so long been tending and darkening ever as it stole along, and yet it enclosed a charm that made them linger upon it and claim another, and another, and after all, another moment. The forest was obscure around them, and creaked with a blast that was passing through it. The boughs were tossing heavily above their heads, while one solemn old tree groaned dolefully to another, as if telling the sad story of the pair that sat beneath, or constrained to forebode evil to come. And yet they lingered. How dreary looked the forest track that led backward to the settlement, where Hester Prynne must take up again the burden of her ignominy, and the minister the hollow mockery of his good name. So they lingered an instant longer. No golden light had ever been so precious as the gloom of this dark forest. Here, seen only by his eyes,
The scarlet letter need not burn into the bosom of the fallen woman. Here, seen only by her eyes, Arthur Dimmesdale, false to God and man, might be for one moment true. He started at a thought that suddenly occurred to him.
"Hester," cried he, "here is a new horror. Roger Chillingworth knows your purpose to reveal his true character. Will he continue, then, to keep our secret? What will now be the course of his revenge?"
"There is a strange secrecy in his nature," replied Hester thoughtfully. "And it is grown upon him by the hidden practices of his revenge. I deem it not likely that he will betray the secret. He will doubtless seek other means of satiating his dark passion."
"And I? How am I to live longer, breathing the same air with this deadly enemy?"
exclaimed Arthur Dimmesdale, shrinking within himself, and pressing his hand nervously against his heart, a gesture that had grown involuntary with him.
"Think for me, Hester. Thou art strong. Resolve for me."
"Thou must dwell no longer with this man," said Hester, slowly and firmly. "Thy heart must be no longer under his evil eye."
"It were far worse than death," replied the minister. "But how to avoid it? What choice remains to me? Shall I lie down again on these withered leaves, where I cast myself when thou didst tell me what he was? Must I sink down there and die at once?"
"Alas, what a ruin has befallen thee," said Hester, with the tears gushing into her eyes. "Wilt thou die for very weakness? There is no other cause."
"The judgment of God is on me,"
answered the conscience-stricken priest.
"It is too mighty for me to struggle with."
"Heaven would show mercy," rejoined Hester, "hadst thou but the strength to take advantage of it."
"Be thou strong for me," answered he. "Advise me what to do."
"Is the world then so narrow?" exclaimed Hester Prynne, fixing her deep eyes on the minister's, and instinctively exercising magnetic power over a spirit so shattered and subdued that it could hardly hold itself erect. "Doth the universe lie within the compass of yonder town, which only a little time ago was but a leaf-strewn desert, as lonely as this around us? Whither leads yonder forest track? Backward to the settlement, thou sayest. Yes, but onward, too. Deeper it goes, and deeper into the wilderness, less plainly to be seen at every step, until some few miles hence the yellow leaves will show no vestige of the white man's tread. There, thou art free. So brief a journey would bring thee from a world where thou hast been most wretched, to one where thou mayest still be happy. Is there not shade enough in all this boundless forest to hide thy heart from the gaze of Roger Chillingworth?"
"Yes, Hester, but only under the fallen leaves," replied the minister with a sad smile.
"Then there is the broad pathway of the sea," continued Hester. "It brought thee hither. If thou so choose, it will bear thee back again, in our native land. Whether in some remote rural village, or in a vast London, or surely in Germany, in France, in pleasant Italy, thou wouldst be beyond his power and knowledge. And what hast thou to do with all these iron men and their opinions? They have kept thy better part in bondage too long already."
"It cannot be,"
answered the minister, listening as if he were called upon to realize a dream.
"I am powerless to go. Wretched and sinful as I am, I have had no other thought than to drag on my earthly existence in the sphere where Providence hath placed me. Lost as my own soul is, I would still do what I may for other human souls. I dare not quit my post, though an unfaithful sentinel, whose sure reward is death and dishonor, when his dreary watch shall come to an end."
"Thou art crushed under the 7 years' weight of misery," replied Hester, fervently resolved to buoy him up with her own energy. "But thou shalt leave it all behind thee. It shall not cumber thy steps as thou treadest along the forest path. Neither shalt thou freight the ship with it, if thou prefer to cross the sea. Leave this wreck and ruin here where it hath happened. Meddle no more with it. Begin all anew. Hast thou exhausted possibility in the failure of this one trial?" "Not so. The future is yet full of trial and success. There is happiness to be enjoyed. There is good to be done. Exchange this false life of thine for a true one. Be, if thy spirit summon thee to such a mission, the teacher and apostle of the red men. Or, as is more thy nature, be a scholar and a sage among the wisest and the most renowned of the cultivated world. Preach, write, act, do anything, save to lie down and die. Give up this name of Arthur Dimmesdale and make thyself another and a high one, such as thou canst wear without fear or shame. Why shouldst thou tarry so much as one other day in the torments that have so gnawed into thy life, that have made thee feeble to will and to do, that will leave thee powerless even to repent? Up and away. Oh, Hester, cried Arthur Dimmesdale, in whose eyes a fitful light, kindled by her enthusiasm, flashed up and died away. Thou tellest of running a race to a man whose knees are tottering beneath him. I must die here. There is not the strength or courage left me to venture into the wide, strange, difficult world alone. It was the last expression of the despondency of a broken spirit. He lacked energy to grasp the better fortune that seemed within his reach. He repeated the word. Alone, Hester. Thou shalt not go alone, answered she in a deep whisper. Then, all was spoken. Thank you for joining Bite at a Time Books today, while we read a bite of one of your favorite classics. Again, my name is Bree Carlisle, and I hope you come back tomorrow for the next bite of The Scarlet Letter.